This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. The relationship we see in our early lives, or actually all the relationships we see in our early lives, affect every single aspect of who we are today. Maybe you grew up in a home where your parents fought over money or had trouble staying faithful to each other. Or maybe your parents equated discipline with love. These early interactions have an impact on everyone and on all of our current relationships. And it's important for us to understand our history if we truly want to thrive in our present. My guest today, Vienna Farron, is a licensed marriage and family therapist who specializes in helping her clients understand their personal narratives. Vienna is with us today to explain why we really keep these narratives and how we tell the story of our lives and how we can change that and how this influences everything that we do. Vienna, welcome to the show. It is my greatest pleasure and honor that you're with me today.
Thanks, Erica. So happy to be here.
I saw you speak in Los Angeles a couple weeks ago, and you know, this subject matter on your narratives and changing your old story to your new story, and this is such a multi-layered conversation that is so important that I'm so excited to have this with you today. And can we tell our listeners a little bit on how they begin to be aware and conscious of that chatter? That chatter, that narrative, that talk, that story. First, how to be aware, and then obviously how we can change that to serve us in healthier ways.
Sure. Yeah, it's an interesting topic because I think a lot of us have resistance to this idea that the past is still affecting us today. I mean, people don't like that. Right? We like to be in control. We're like, no, I've got it.
I'm over it.
I'm over it. Nothing in the past really bothers me all that much. And this is where I think we go wrong. And maybe a little bit about what you saw Mark and I talk about at the at the event a few weeks ago. The importance and the value in being able to look at our story and label it exactly as it was, exactly as it is. So many of us have the tendency to shrink it and minimize it and distort it in some way. This is our kind of like rational mind, our intellectual mind, kind of explaining, oh, well, this really painful thing happened in my past, but this is why it had to happen, right? And so we like kind of explain it away. And we do such a disservice to ourselves by not allowing the part to say, this is what happened. This is what happened. This is how I felt in that space. Listen, we are such resilient humans, right? A lot of the things that have happened in our past are not going to dictate the rest of our lives because we can create change from that space. But when we actually avoid it and deny it, that's when it does. It's so fascinating. It's actually flipped, right? When we don't label it, when we don't give it the attention, it actually continues to lead us through our lives. But when we finally slow down and say, this is what happened. Here is my story. Here's how it affected me. This is the pain that I experienced. And this is what I'm going to do from that space. That's when we start to step into our freedom and start to no longer have to subscribe to the old story. And it's almost like we don't give ourselves permission to leave that story because the story is asking us to honor it and say, like, please just label me as I was and stop lying about it. So it's so fascinating that once we actually just sink into it is when we start to give ourselves that freedom.
Yeah, and really feeling it, you know, I know that, and also, you know, what's hard is, I just, you know, in my own life, my mom always, like, she'll say to me, well, that, that didn't happen. What do you mean? And I'm like, well, okay, maybe I didn't feel that way. You know, I mean, I've obviously done a lot of work on things from my childhood, but because someone else sees it in a different light doesn't mean that what you were feeling in the moment is invalidated, you know? And that, I think that's really another powerful way of why labeling is important, because you know what, maybe someone else doesn't call that abandonment. Maybe someone else doesn't call that a hard time, but if it was to you, who's to say we need to minimize our trauma or minimize our feelings? And I think that's what happens too, is that we minimize our feelings. Someone tells us they're not important. We push them aside and we march forward. But like you said, it starts to creep up and it doesn't go away.
Sure. Yeah. And I also find that when people don't have very clear traumas, or when they find themselves like comparing their wounds to other people, that they play it really small, because we don't think that we have the right to say, oh, I was hurt by this quote unquote small thing, but gosh, you know, my neighbor, her brother committed suicide, so I don't have the right to feel badly or to have pain, because my wound or pain is not as bad as the next person. And that again is where we go so wrong. Like, our wounds are not in competition with each other.
Exactly.
We have a story, and we need to be able to honor that space and, you know, not do that disservice to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I love that what you said a couple weeks ago when I did see you live, and that was really, it stuck with me, because you were really discussing what was mirrored when you were young, just for an example, like in your household, you know, who were the two, you know, most prominent figures, let's just call them mom and dad, and in context to love, sex, religion, education, you know, what did you learn? What did you see? Mm-hmm. Is it that let's say the man has a specific role and leaves the house, or the woman is the nag, or, you know, whatever.
Absolutely.
You saw sometimes that narrative, that story, that all men do this, all women do this, all marriages are this, you know, then that's how it starts to form. Because a lot of people are kind of unclear about, you know, the language around this too. So I just wanted to speak to that. And if you could tell everybody kind of how to start looking at their narratives and that.
Yeah,
context.
Absolutely. I think, so what we know is we are the person that we speak to the most, right? Like, you're constantly talking to yourself from the moment you wake up to the moment that you lay your head down. It's constantly going. And we've got this like inner critic. We have this narrative that just keeps going and going and going. And it's not quiet most of the time. And I think that one of the things that we can all do is take a step back and actually set a few hours for yourself to start exploring what messages you received growing up from your caretakers, from teachers, from coaches, from society, around communication, around love, around gender, around education, around sexuality, around intimacy, around religion, around, you know, around all of these things. Like, what were the messages that you picked up on? And these are going to be verbal and nonverbal messages. They'll be implicit, they'll be explicit. Right? Maybe somebody very clearly said to you, like, buck up, boys don't cry. Or maybe you just witnessed that the men in your life never shared emotions. So there might be something that's very direct and very clear, and then maybe something that's a bit more passive, but that there's still a message there that directs the way in which you believe you need to behave or act or communicate. And so actually going back and kind of sort of taking an inventory of, like, what are the messages that have been strongest in my life? What are the things that really stand out to me? And how are they leading my life? Because really, from the beginning, we are being told what to think, right? Mm-hmm. And the beautiful part about coming into this part of our lives is that we get to check that now. Like, we get to say, like, okay, hold on. Like, obviously, people needed to give me some of this so that I could get through life in the early stages. But now, like, do I actually believe this? Like, is this something that fits okay, like fits well with me? Or do I challenge it now? Maybe this isn't a narrative or a message that I subscribe to, because these messages do turn into our inner talk with ourselves, right? And though a lot of time when it's more negative based, it keeps us from vulnerability. It keeps us from brave love. It keeps us from relationships that go far deeper, and that, you know, we stay on the surface, or we're so afraid, like, we live in this fear-based faith. And so I really believe that in order to at least get a step closer, we need to know what it is that's keeping us from it. A lot of times people say like, oh, do this, do that. Here are five things you can do. And you go through this list. And that's all good and well. But if you don't understand what the constraints are, then those things are never actually going to land. Right? You can do, but if there's something that blocks it, it will never amount to what it is you want it to be. So understanding what blocks it, what keeps us from it, is really, really powerful work. And going into the narratives, going into what messages have been loud and clear from the beginning, or ones that you got, even as adults too, how those are faulty narratives versus ones that we're choosing to subscribe to.
Absolutely. And I know it's hard to shake. You know, I have clients that will say to me, this is fine. I don't mind that I can't be vulnerable. This is what's gotten me this far, you know, and I always like to challenge them into saying, but how do you know you can't go further, you know, or how come you do, you know, and what is the fear around vulnerability, and what is the fear around showing who you are, and actually maybe you even learning parts of yourself that you don't know exist.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, but I think it's such an easier way to just living by what you're told and not challenging it. That's why I think so many people don't take that next step and hop on that platform and rise a little bit higher.
Yeah. The people who say that, they're right. And we can have compassion for that part, right? When they say, oh, but it's gotten me this far and I'm actually okay with it. Well, that part that's speaking is actually just trying to protect them from something that's really scary, whether it's rejection or abandonment, for example. And so that part is coming into the driver's seat and it's saying, oh, just be okay. Like, you don't need to be vulnerable. It's gotten you this far, right? Like, that's in itself.
I hear that all the time.
Actually creating a narrative, right? And so, I mean, this is a lot of work, and obviously it's a lot of information for listeners in a short amount of time, but the work that you can do in a therapy setting or in a coaching setting is really beautiful when you can understand what the parts are doing and that you can gently ask your like protector part to move over and say like, I know that you're just trying to protect me from, you know, being abandoned or being rejected, but right now I am going to take the leap and see how, you know, sort of just see how this goes, and it might hurt, but I'm willing to lean into it for the possibility of experiencing something new. Because if we just say, oh, this is safe, oh, this protects me, then that story just keeps happening over and over again. At some point, we need to be able to gently move that part aside and say like, hold on, I can come back to the self. Like, I am strong, I am capable, I am worthy, and I'm going to put myself on the line and ask this part to move over. I don't need protection right now. I've got it. And lean into it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But that continuation and trusting in our resiliency, that when it doesn't work, that is not the end of us. Every time we don't do it, we send ourselves a message that says we do not believe in our resiliency.
Right. Absolutely. I am so happy you said that. Let's just say that again.
Every time we don't do it, we send ourselves the message that we do not trust in our own resiliency. And we are such a resilient species. Like, we bounce back from most things, right? Like, we bounce back. Like, if we are still here, we have all bounced back from something, right? And so to trust in that and give ourselves the message that we are much stronger than we give ourselves credit for. But it certainly takes a lot of work. It's not this, you know, easy step. And I certainly don't expect people to just listen to this and, you know, go out there and necessarily do it. But it's a good first step. And with the right people around you, you can really go far with it.
Yeah. And to explore this, like you said, with a therapist or a coach or somebody that could help move you through it is imperative and really helpful. And something else you spoke about, which I, you know, to jump quickly, but also along the same lines, we were discussing, you know, communication in the first segment, but also there's something you and Mark mentioned when I saw you speaking here in LA, and I know you'll be speaking more in the future, so I encourage everybody to go hear Vienna, but about criticisms and complaints and what you were saying is for people out there that are constantly frustrated or or feel like they're not heard or feel like that they have to criticize, that's really an emotional need not being met. And I love this because in my own work, I always say to my clients, go a level deeper and tell me really what it is you're upset about. Because it's always like, you know, this person disrespected me or this person, you know, never calls me back, you know, and I'm and I always say to them, could you go one level deeper and tell me what that really means? Does that mean you don't feel important? Does that mean you don't, you know? So, and I know you spoke to this, that same kind of, that same message. And so, yeah, can we talk about that a little
bit? Absolutely. Yeah, this is one of my most favorite things to touch on because it is so powerful. We have these complaints and criticisms of our partners and these frustrations that come up over and over and over again. Sometimes they're the same ones, sometimes they're different. And a lot of times the content of them actually is very, very silly.
And it could be with family or friends too, right?
Absolutely.
Anybody.
I mean, this is really with anybody. But I have people like sheepishly come in and they're like, we were fighting about, you know, like the lemons, and they know that it's so silly. And they're like, I don't know why. And when we do understand that behind every criticism, behind every complaint, behind our frustrations is a deep emotional need that's not getting met, like that's a big light bulb that goes off for people, right? We're not actually fighting about the lemons. We're not actually fighting about, you know, the toilet seat or any kind of classic example that's been given in the past. You know, there is an emotional need that's not being met, yet people don't know necessarily, one, how to identify what the emotional need is for themselves, and two, then it demands the vulnerability to be able to turn to your partner or to your friend or to your family member to say, hey, I was really hurt when XYZ happened, and I felt unimportant, or I didn't feel like I was a priority to you, or you know, whatever it might be. And like going into that space is such a beautiful spot because you're no longer forcing the other person like on the defensive, right? So when we are pointing the finger, it's so easy for the other person to try to defend themselves and explain why it is what it is that we're saying is incorrect. But when we go into this emotional space and talk about what our emotional need is or what it is that we're not getting, a person isn't trying to debate that with you, right? Like there's a space for intimacy and connection to happen because especially if that person is in like a loving space with you, like they don't want you to be feeling that way. And it does create this opportunity for intimacy because then we get closer to understanding more and more about each other. So absolutely. Like this is one of the most powerful things I think that people can hear is that behind every criticism, frustration, or complaint is a deep emotional need that isn't being met. And when we can identify that and see like what it is that's getting triggered for us, and then we take in the vulnerability to share that with those people, we give ourselves this opportunity for beautiful intimacy and an opportunity really for braver love.
It's such a beautiful equation, like just saying it, like, you know, I mean, it's really three parts. And like you said, it gives the other person a chance to like lean into it, to maybe learn about themselves. They could grow more. They could, you know, they know how to be a better friend, a better partner, a better father, a better mother. And, you know, and it's a win-win. But like you said, it does take it takes some courage and it takes some strength and it takes maybe just a little bit of muscle building, mental muscle building of you can do this and talk yourself through it, you know?
Yeah. And it goes both ways because a lot of times when we then voice this emotional need or what it is that we're not getting, it then puts the other person face to face with shame.
Sure.
And so then we have to, it's almost this like handoff of an opportunity for brave love. So just, it's not this one part segment. Then the next thing when it's saying like, well, oh gosh, now I'm sitting with shame because this, I don't do this well enough. Right. And being able to then again, lean right back into vulnerability to give yourselves the opportunity for intimacy and connection and brave love, because that conversation just goes and goes and goes and can go to such depth. It's really beautiful. Like these are complex things that we're talking about. But again, with like the right steps and the right people around you, you can really go to this beautiful space of relationship.
Right. And that brings me to honesty. Like, you know, honesty is another thing I discuss a lot. Again, another chapter in the book I wrote. And I just feel like it's very hard for people to fully embrace being honest with others for fear that they are going to hurt them, that they feel like they may be abandoned. And I know that I know we all have fears, and they are reasonable for us to have these fears. But I think you've said in many posts that I've read, when we let our fears choose for us, you know, that's when we start to shrink and become a little bit less and less brave.
When
you just say, like, I honestly feel this way, and this, or, you know, this is what happened honestly, and to speak your truth, I think is very difficult for people when they're just starting to change their lives in healthier ways.
Right. It's, you know, it's always speaking your truth with compassion, right? Like, we don't have to go in there with, you know, like, and guns blazing, and, you know, we're not trying to hurt people, right? It's like, I can speak my truth with love. But what I'd like to just mention quickly is, a lot of times when we don't step into that truthful space, that honest space, it's this caretaker part in us, right? Oh, I don't want to hurt the other person. And so I'd invite your listeners to think about their role as a caretaker. If that's a familiar role that they've been in, whether it's in a family system growing up or relationally for them kind of as adults, but to think about, like, what are the messages of, you know, not hurting other people? Did you kind of fly under the radar in your family system, because if you ever spoke up, it would, like, the people around you would get so emotional and everything would break down? And, you know, like, it's really going back to think about, like, why am I in this caretaker role? How is it keeping me from being honest and leaning into this space of transparency? Why am I trying to protect others? Where have I seen myself do that before? And do I need to keep doing that now? Like, is that a role that I am willing to keep at the expense of my honesty and ability to share my truth?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think when someone steps into this kind of new light of a non-negotiable, that they're going to lead with their truth from now on. Cause I know that there's a big movement out there, cause even all these wonderful people that showed up to listen to you, and all these amazing people that are following you, and many people that are healers, and many people that are changing the narratives out there. I do think that there is a willingness now more than ever.
Totally,
you know,
absolutely.
It's a beautiful thing to feel. But for them to see that, you know, saying goodbye to their old selves, or saying goodbye to a part of them that no longer serves them, is actually a really amazing opportunity, you know, in a different way. And I think an opportunity to heal, really. And I think that's what's kind of hard too, is that we get so stuck in these old identities of who we think we are, that it's almost, it's like we have to begin to, you know, be compassionate to ourselves, to shed it.
Yeah, that's a great point, Erica. I think a lot of times people see it as an abandonment of the self, or as if they're being disloyal to themselves.
Yeah.
And so they want to hold on tightly. And so another thing that I like to talk about is this idea of permission, giving ourselves permission to no longer be in that space, or giving ourselves permission to no longer be in that role. That was one of the greatest breakthroughs that I had personally, was, you know, I was certainly a caretaker role within my family, wanting to make sure that everybody was okay. And like, taking that through into my adult life and having this breakthrough at one point where I realized, like, oh my goodness, I take care of everybody else at the expense of me, as if I don't have any needs, or that I'm always this constant rock for everyone else. And this fear that if I remove myself from this role, that the system is going to shake and it's going to break. And it's not true. And if it shakes, that's on all of the rest of the adults in the world to figure their own stuff out, right? Like, isn't that it? Like, oh my goodness, the system is shaking and you don't know what to do because you're, you know, adult child is no longer caretaking this part for you. Like, oh my goodness, now you're confronted with your stuff, and now you have to do work on yourself. And so that's the part, oh, it's so beautiful, but it's hard because it makes other people then have to create change for themselves. And when you see them as resistant to that, you're not really sure what's going to happen on the other side.
Yeah, and those roles are just so, we get so powerfully stuck in them that it really, there's so many different emotions that come with that, which is, you know, feeling you're going to abandon the person you have been kind of taking care of, and then again, looking at your own self once you do step aside and say, okay, now that I'm not going to take care of this person and be at their beck and call, now I have this time, space, and energy, how am I going to, you know, how am I going to treat myself, which I think is... Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So how do you as a as a clinician and a healer and a helper and all the things that you are, the wonderful things you are, how do you take care of yourself?
Sorry, say that again, Erica.
Oh, how do you take care of yourself mentally, emotionally? Is there some tips just quick you could share?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, being active is so important. I really feel mind and body are so aligned for me, athlete growing up. And so I just keep that with me, and make sure that I honor that part and make sure that my body is in motion as much as possible.
Yes.
My friendships and relationships, like really just, I personally love one-on-one time with people. That's where I feel I thrive. And so carving out time to just grab coffees or dinners with people who really add value to my life. I love conversation. I love people who challenge themselves. And it's just, it's really balanced. And I think I do a really great job of balance. I love the work that I do, but the play outside of that, the travel, all of that, like there's just really integrating the different parts and doing something every day for the self can really help. It does really help me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, yeah, I totally agree. And I feel like everybody needs to do that. So thank you, Vianna, so much for sharing your expertise and your personal experiences and just everything that you are. I really appreciate you being with us. And so everyone could find Vianna. Her website is NewYorkCouplesCounseling.com, NewYorkCouplesCounseling.com. And you could find her on Instagram at MindfulMFT, MindfulMFT. Thank you, Vianna, for being with us. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you all for joining us and stay well.